First item on the agenda today is Mr. Jeff Freeman from the Public Facilities Authority, who will walk us through the new green and yellow and white sheets. Maybe not yellow. Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Thank you for coming early.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. My name is Jeff Freeman. I'm the Executive Director of the Public Facilities Authority. We are the state agency that provides water financing to cities, sanitary districts, other local units of government for water infrastructure projects. In your packet, or in your packets, you have a PFA handout that I'll be working through. The first page is a summary of the PFA water infrastructure financing programs. These programs are available and open to all cities in the state. Projects are ranked based on project priority lists developed by the Pollution Control Agency and the Health Department. Projects are ranked based on the age and condition of the city's existing infrastructure and public health and water quality criteria. The PFA funding framework is based on low interest loans that are broadly available and targeted grants based on affordability criteria and to upgrade treatment plants for specific pollutants to address water quality goals. Eligible projects include all of the basic municipal water infrastructure, rehabilitation, replacement of treatment plants, wastewater and drinking water treatment plants, sanitary sewer collection systems, water main distribution, wells, water towers, all of that kind of thing. The PFA's largest programs are the Clean Water and Drinking Water Revolving Funds, which provide low-interest loans for municipal wastewater and drinking water projects and some stormwater treatment projects as well. The revolving loan funds are supported by annual federal capitalization grants through the U.S. EPA. A state provides a 20% match, a required 20% match, and PFA revenue bonds. We sell revenue bonds to leverage additional loan dollars. All the loan repayments revolve back to make new loans. Since 1990, the two funds together have made over $4 billion in low-interest loans to Minnesota communities. With all of that revolving capital, the loans have significant lending capacity. Currently, the average annual lending capacity of the Clean Water Fund, which is the wastewater side, is about $95 million per year and about $40 million per year on the drinking water side. That's in perpetuity. The average annual interest rates in 2018 were about 1.1%. So these are very low interest loans, even though the private bond market has been at historically low rates for many years. Our rates are lower, and cities achieve significant savings from those lower rates. While the revolving funds have significant capacity, the loan requests are typically 2 to 3 times the annual average annual capacity of the programs. The governor's bonding request includes $5 million, an additional $5 million, which combined with prior appropriations will match the estimated 2019-2020 federal grants and continue to help build that lending capacity. The next PFA program on the list is the WIF program, which provides grants up to $5 million based on affordability criteria for high-cost projects. WIF grants are packaged with PFA loans or can be provided as a match for projects that we co-fund with USDA Rural Development, which is the federal agency that also provides loans and grants for water infrastructure, focusing on small rural communities. Next is the Point Source Implementation Grant Program. that helps cities upgrade treatment facilities to reduce discharge of specific pollutants. Phosphorus is the most common, but there's others as well. The PSIG grants are provided for 80% of eligible costs, up to $7 million. Only the components that are directly related to that additional treatment are eligible for the PSIG grants. Finally, there's the Small Community Wastewater Treatment Program, which is a much smaller program, provides technical assistance and construction loans and grants to help small unsewered communities replace failing individual septic systems with community systems. Next, after that first sheet, are a series of green spreadsheets. The green spreadsheets are show the all of the projects on the current clean water project priority list. This is primarily wastewater related projects. The first thing to keep in mind is that this is a five-year list of projects that cities have submitted to seek potential state funding. The PPL is redone at the start of each fiscal year. Some projects are in very early stages of planning. Others are in the design phase. Others have all received all their approvals and are ready to start construction. So it's a mix of project readiness. Projects are continually moving at their own pace through the funding process. The PFA does not award funding until a project has received all technical and financial approvals, has taken bids, and is ready to start construction. The sheets show the current funding estimates and status for projects on the 2019 project priority list, which was originally approved in at the beginning of fiscal year, August to September of 2018. Projects that have been fully funded, meaning they are now under construction, are the ones that are shaded with the gray row all the way across. Where there's just a particular cell that's shaded means that shows a project that has met certain milestones in the review and approval process, and funds have been reserved based on the process that's laid out in the program statutes. So projects are listed here in priority order based on that PPL rank in column 2. A number of cities are listed more than once because projects are being broken into phases, or a city is proposing to do work on different parts of its system. There's a short project description, there's estimated project costs, and then gets into the PFA program, starting with columns 6 and 7 are the Clean Water Revolving Fund. You see the term 2019 IUP requested loans. IUP is intended use plan. It's the document that we are required to prepare under federal law each year to lay out how we're managing the fund and what cities are eligible to apply. The cities with dollar amounts that are shown under that column are the ones that are on the current year's list, have completed the initial planning work, and I have identified that these projects are scheduled for construction in, excuse me, in 2019. You see the WIF grants in columns 8, 9, and 10. Column 8 is funds that have been actually awarded or reserved right now from existing available funds. Columns 9 and 10 are the estimated grant needs for pending projects, both with to match or to co-fund with our PFA loans or to match funds with rural development. Column 11 is the PSIG grants. Columns 12, 13 are the small community program, and then you see the other funders, primarily our partners, USDA Rural Development, to the right of that. On pages page five of six, you'll notice there's a little dotted line that's shown under the last 40-point project which happens to be Pequot Lakes, but the key thing there is 40 points. That is our funding cutoff for the loan program that's determined each year by the PFA board, but we work hard to keep that at a consistent level because we have the revolving capacity of the funds. We're able to anticipate how far down the list each year we can go, and so cities that are ranked above 40 points, whether they're a project this year or looking at construction in a future year, can count on or plan for at least that they'll be able to receive the low-interest loans from the PFA.
Excuse me, Mr. Freeman. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. So we are to understand that projects that are above 40, you have enough funding for this year to fund those projects?
Madam Freeman. Chair, Representative Erdahl, we have adequate loan capacity to make loans to those projects. Many of them are needing grant funds to offset some of the debt and be able to proceed. But, yes, we have loan funds for those projects.
Representative Erdahl.
But you don't have sufficient grant funds yet?
Correct, Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, and I was just about to turn to, well, if you bear with me 1 minute, the yellow sheets are the alphabetical listing, and then right behind the yellow sheets is a breakout showing just the WIF program, and this will get to your question, Representative Erdahl.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. Well, one of the main things, obviously, that we are interested in is, you know, how far down the list you have funding for each of these categories, and also to go into next year, how much funding do you need to complete the projects in the next cycle?
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl. And so on that sheet, the first white sheet after the yellow that says WIF wastewater in the top right corner, it's the projects from those green sheets that have identified potentially eligible WIF needs. But here are the projects. In addition to priority order, the projects are grouped by project readiness. And so the first grouping says FY 2018 carryover projects. Those were on last year's list, approved, all the technical approvals certified by the Pollution Control Agency by the end of last fiscal year, June 30th, 2018. So those are all committed to by USDA Rural Development, the two different columns. We have funds for all those projects. You can see the gray rows across. Many of them have been funded and are now under construction. Others are completing the final bidding and are ready to start, will be ready to start construction this summer. The next middle group says potential 2019 WIF needs. These are the projects that are either on our 2019 intended use plan for loans or targeted for funding from USDA Rural Development this year. They have not completed all of the review. They're on track to do so, but they will have to complete the review process and get that certification by PCA by the end of June. You can see a dotted line there which relates to the little funding table in the top right corner of the list. At the start of the fiscal year, again, this list goes back to July 1. At the start of the fiscal year, you can see the funding that was available. Additional funding that we recently received with the passage of the House File 80 bill. $50.7 million in total would fully fund down through where the dotted line shows, which happens to be walk-on. The governor has recommended a total of $40 million in his bonding bill for the WIF program that's split between wastewater and drinking water. At this point, we're recommending a split of $15 million to the wastewater side, $25 million to the drinking water. That additional $15 million would fully fund the projects that we anticipate will be approved and ready by June 30th, those remaining projects in that middle section, two harbors, Buell, Annandale, Deer River, and it will then carry forward some funding for high priority projects that would be ready to go at the early and next fiscal year, potentially as early as this fall. The next sheet, another white sheet, is a similar view breakout of the Point Source Implementation Grant Program, the PSIG program for the treatment upgrades. Again, projects are grouped by readiness, so the first group are the carryover projects that were approved at the end of last fiscal year. The next group are the 2019 applications that we've received and the projects that we anticipate could be potentially complete the review and be certified by June 30th. They still have to do that, but we anticipate these are on track for getting that approval by the end of this fiscal year. The dotted line shows how far the current funding would go based on the funding from the start of the fiscal year, the additional funding from House File 80, $56.9 million in total, would fully fund down through the Loretto. The governor's bonding recommendation for the PSIG program is $22 million. There's also $18 million in the governor's clean water legacy fund budget request, and we anticipate that those additional funds would be sufficient to fund the remainder of the potential 2019 projects that you can see going on to the second page, and then carry forward some funds into next fiscal year for high priority projects that are ready to be approved in early next fiscal year. The next, then you get into the blue sheets, which are the drinking water project priority list ranked by the health department. Again, it's the same process. The projects that are shaded all the way across have been funded, are now under construction. Projects with cells that are shaded have certain parts of funding committed and are still waiting for remaining funding. In this case, our dotted line as far as the loan program goes is shown on page 6 of 9. Seven points is our cutoff on the drinking water priority list. Again, that's been a level that we've maintained for several years, and so cities above that level can at least count on low-interest loans or at least have some confidence of being able to achieve low-interest loans. It is a line that we revisit each year and determine if, based on the capacity of the fund and the requests that we've received, but we work hard to maintain that at a consistent level. There's a lot of good projects below that cutoff, as you can see, and that's why we hope to continue to receive the federal funding, the state match, and continue to build the capacity. I'd like to be able to push that cutoff line down in future years. And then finally, Well, there's the alphabetical list on yellow, and then the final white sheet in the packet is the drinking water WIF breakout. Similar to before, there's the carryover projects that are either projects that have all been funded now since the beginning of the fiscal year, or at least have funds reserved from available funds. We get into the potential 2019 projects that still have to go through the approval and certification process, but assuming they all do in priority order, that dotted line is right at Battle Lake, would be the last project to be fully funded. The projects below that will require additional appropriations. The governor's bonding recommendation, as I mentioned, $40 million for WIF in total. $25 million would be sufficient to fund the remaining potential 2019 projects that are, these are projects that would be in line for construction this year, and then a small amount that would be carried forward to high priority projects for next year. And with that, Madam Chair, I'll stop and be happy to answer any more questions.
Representative Tarkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Freeman, for your good work. And I'm a big fan of PFA. I think the way you operate is exemplary. And I'm also a big fan of small towns. I have a number of them in my district. but as you know, sometimes the per capita cost of these projects gets to be very high. And in some cases, there are opportunities for alternatives. I'm thinking of the potential for tying a small town, for instance, into a regional drinking water system, or tying a small town to a neighboring town for wastewater treatment. How does that part of this process enter into your work?
Mr. Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, all of these projects at the essentially the first major step of the funding process is to go through a engineering planning analysis. On the wastewater side, it's called a facilities plan that's reviewed by the Pollution Control Agency. On the health department, it's the project proposal that has the analysis from the city's engineer. And essentially, that process is to look at the city's system, determine the condition and the need for various improvements, and then to look at the alternatives. And those alternatives can range from different types of treatment. Does always include a look at, are there regionalization alternatives that would make sense, and put some numbers, preliminary numbers, to those alternatives, not just the capital costs, but also the long-term operation and maintenance cost of those different alternatives, and that's all presented to the city to make a decision on their selected alternative, and then reviewed by Pollution Control Agency or Health Department to confirm that that the city has chosen a cost-effective alternative.
Representative Tarkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that answer, Mr. Freeman. Is there any extra credit for creativity, or are we somehow encouraging these communities to look at the lowest cost, the most efficient, long-range, practical alternatives?
Director Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, I think we are, but it's there's not necessarily bonus points, for example, but there certainly is a thorough review to ensure that cities have looked at all the possibilities, and part of that is also related to energy conservation, and there are more and more ways to conserve energy, which then, of course, reduces operation and maintenance costs. We even have on the clean water side some of the federal dollars we receive are targeted to small grants to provide encouragement to consider certain energy efficiency measures. So there is a process for doing that. Bottom line, it's finding the most cost-effective alternative as its own reward for a city, because they have the long, not just the cost of building it, the long-term costs of supporting that system and paying the debt. There's always some amount of debt on these new projects, and that's borne by the ratepayers. And in a small town, that especially in a small town, the financial challenges are very significant. So we try to make sure cities fully understand the costs and understand the costs on a per household basis, and then work with them to try to make sure they're looking at all those alternatives.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. You know, that's really an important aspect of this work, making sure that the right investment is made in the right community and that the standards that we apply are the appropriate standards given the circumstances in any particular situation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, sir. I always enjoy your presentations. I have a curiosity on the clean water legacy money. So that merges with the bonding money, it seems like. So they look like they're kind of moving together. Is that correct?
Mr. Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Lilly, yes, that Point Source Implementation Grant Program, which went by a different name, TMDL grants previously, that goes back actually to the prior to the constitutional amendment and the creation of the Clean Water Fund. Those programs were started just prior to that, part of the, I think it was called the Clean Water Legacy Act at the time, to provide additional help to cities to do that, meet those more stringent treatment requirements. That program was always funded from legacy funds. That was the source of funding, the sole source of funding for many years for that program. In 2016, part of Governor Dayton's Water Infrastructure Initiative really focused on the need for the state to do more to help cities with these projects in several ways. But one of those was the governor's proposal to essentially supplement the Clean Water Fund dollars with bonding dollars, so that the program at that time, both the grant percentage and the maximum grant were significantly increased on the Point Source program as well. So now since then, we've got both bond dollars and Clean Water Fund dollars supporting that Point Source implementation grant program.
Representative
Considine,
quick.
Considine. Representative Torkelson pretty much covered everything I wanted to ask. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Freeman.
Thank you.
Representative Bonner. While we're waiting for her, Representative Lee.
Madam Chair, I move approval of the minutes for March 14th, 2019.
Representative Lee moves adoption of the minutes as printed. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion is adopted. Representative Bonner, welcome to the committee. You have 5 minutes, just like everyone. Everyone should be ready to approach the desk when your turn comes. We don't have moving around time. You have one testifier, and you have to leave time for questions.
Great. Good morning, Madam Chair, members. I want to start today by recognizing I have beside me Mayor Mark Stephenson here representing Maple Grove. I also have City Manager Heidi Nelson, who is behind me, and Ken Ashfield, who unfortunately was not able to be here today. but he is our Director of Public Works, and I want to thank them for their great amount of support, as well as Representative Robbins, my colleague behind me, who is here today in support of this measure as well. I want to thank you all for allowing me the opportunity to introduce HF 1913 to you today, members. This is a bonding project, originally referred to as the Crosstown of the North. This project extends well beyond the borders of Maple Grove and adds a vital corridor of commerce that extends from the northwest of Hennepin County all the way westward through into Wright County and serves as a complementary thoroughfare to I-94. The project has been nearly 50 years in the making, spanning back to the vision, which began back in the 1960s. The bulk of the work actually began in the 90s, and the connection to I-94 was completed at the end of 2016. What is left, or the final leg of this journey, is to complete the connection between Highway 610 and County Road 30, and to link the westbound 610 with eastbound I-94. The total cost of this project is $45 million. However, we are here today asking for only $18 million of that to bridge the gap between local investments and other funding sources. Members, I want to thank you for the opportunity to allow me to present this bill and take one step closer to the full completion of this vital Northwest corridor. I do have beside me Mayor Mark Stephenson here to testify. He often refers to this as his Grand Cathedral project. It is our hope that we can put the spire on that project and bring the magnificence of it to fruition today. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mayor Stephenson.
Mayor Stephenson, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Mayor Murphy and members of the committee. I'm Mark Stephenson. I'm the mayor of Maple Grove, and I'm happy to be here on behalf of this project. Obviously, 610 was started decades ago. I remember being involved with Congressman Oberstar and Senator Durenberger when the original federal funding was provided for this project back in 1991. Obviously, it has moved from east to west, and we're at the final connection where it needs to be completed. Highway 610 joins at I-94 and goes further west on County Road 30. This is a project that is vital to our community, vital to the northwest suburbs, and something that needs to be completed now. Obviously, we've been working on it for decades, but I think that it's important to know that we've received STP funding of $7 million for this final connection so that that money can be authorized and used in 2023, or we can forward the money before then. Also, one of the things that has to be noted is that I-94 is being worked on over the next 3 years. There's hundreds of millions of dollars that are being spent in this corridor, and one of the real problems today is this connection between 610 and I-94. With this money, with this bill, I-94 and its completion can be fulfilled so that the northwest suburbs, the northwest communities up to St. Cloud, that traffic can flow in the proper way, whether it's on 610 or I-94, and it'll be a great benefit to our communities.
Mayor, will the $18 million that you're asking for today, is that part of the $45 million, and does that complete the project?
It will. $45 million is the total project cost. $18 million really relates to the MnDOT portion the city is ready and willing to put in the rest of the money. With the county, we're ready to complete this project and would do so on a timely basis with the completion of I-94 in the corridor.
Thank you very much. Representative Christensen. Representative Christensen, you have to beat their time.
Yes, I will. Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. I'm Shelley Christensen. I'm from the Stillwater area, and I'm here to talk to you about House File 1342. This is Highway 36 and Manning Avenue. Highway 36 runs right through the heart of my district. It's an important road, an important thoroughfare, and probably the busiest and the most important highway in my district, and it's suffering due to congestion, bottlenecks, and major safety concerns. I'm pleased and honored to have County Commissioner Gary Creasel here today to testify on behalf of House File 1342. You'll hear from the commissioner that the county has been working to make improvements to State Highway 36, and they plan to continue with a major improvement at Manning Avenue, but we need help with funding from the state to do so. This is what House File 1342 does. It provides state funding so the county can improve a state highway. So, Madam Chair, I present you Commissioner Gary Creasel.
Before Commissioner talks, you have a DE1 amendment.
Yes.
That you want us to be aware of.
Okay. Now, do I move that?
No, you don't.
Okay, not in an informational hearing. Okay, the DE1 amendment was done just to change the funding source, I believe. So Commissioner Creasel can speak to that.
Commissioner Creasel.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Christensen. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today in support of House File 1342. My name is Gary Creasel. I'm a Washington County Commissioner. This important project is in my district. Highway 36 is an important east-west expressway. MnDOT refers to it as an interregional corridor that connects Minneapolis to my hometown of Stillwater. Highway 36 then crosses the St. Croix River via the St. Croix Crossing Bridge and becomes Wisconsin Highway 64. Since the opening of the wonderful St. Croix Crossing Bridge, Highway 36 has changed from an interregional corridor to an interstate corridor. As a result, traffic volumes on Highway 36 have increased substantially, as much as 30%. Today in Washington County, this highway has traffic volumes as high as 55,000 vehicles each day. In addition to increased vehicular traffic, Highway 36 has become a major truck route into and out of the Twin Cities. Manning Avenue is a critical north-south county state highway. The intersection is currently controlled by a stoplight that is inefficient and presents safety concerns. Washington County has agreed to lead a project to convert this to a grade separated interchange, just like we are doing at other locations along Highway 36. We are asking for the state to help with the overall cost. The county feds and local cities have already committed $15 million toward the project. MnDOT has no funding available for this project, so we are asking the legislature to support this important improvement with $15 million in GO bonding for a total of $30 million. If you provide the funding, the county will deliver the project in 2021. It's important to note that if we're not moving dirt by 2021, we'll lose the $7 million federal share. Thank you for your time, and I stand to, I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
Your time is up, Mayor, or Commissioner. House File 2496, Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Gary.
Quickly.
Okay. We're gonna beat the deadline on this one, right?
Right.
Okay. Once again, I'd like to present House File 2496. This is for the community of Oak Park Heights, which is also in my district. Oak Park Heights is a community under 5,000 in population, and we need these funds from the legislature this session because it does not have the financial capacity to fund this needed project. We're asking for $794,400 to address the significant delays and above-average severe crashes we're having at the intersection. Oak Park Heights needs the funding this session so that the project can move forward. The City of Oak Park Heights was previously awarded a grant, and we need to meet the MDOT grant requirements for 2020. I would like to introduce Mary McComber, who's the mayor of Oak Park Heights.
Mayor, welcome. Quickly.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. As she said, I'm Mary McComber, Mayor of Oak Park Heights. We are requesting assistance for road improvements on Rel Avenue, which is a city street. The intersection has long been a problem with multiple crashes, lack of function, and poor safety. All of you have the handout, which explains it, so I'm not going to get into it. Due to the location of the current frontage road, there are often long delays and crashes. Even yesterday afternoon while I was waiting at the light to go north, I watched as a car tried to go from east to west across the frontage road and was nearly broadsided, and it was a young mother with small children in the back seat. We are a city under 5,000 in population, and as such do not receive state aid, and we do not receive local government aid. The burden of such road improvements falls solely on the taxpayers of Oak Park Heights. This intersection does not only serve our residents, but the businesses and regional visitors to our city. We have received a small amount through the small city's assistance, which unfortunately barely this year is going to fix our potholes. This project is ready to grow. We have received a grant of $644,000, which, as all of you know, has a time limit on it. We are committed to funding $794,400, and we've come to agreements with some right-of-way acquisitions. There is the shortfall still of $794,400 to complete this $2.23 million project. This will significantly improve the roadway with regard to severity of crashes and for better function. We respectfully request your consideration for funding of the shortfall amount, and I would stand for any questions. And I thank you for your time.
Mayor, once again, you're asking for $794,000.
Correct, Madam Chair.
$4,000.
Correct.
That's and you're matching that.
We're matching that.
Thank you.
Did we make it? Did we beat the time? Representative Yerdal?
Almost.
Yeah.
Are there any other questions?
Nope.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Representative Lee. Somewhere along the line, we have to make up 3 minutes.
Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to present House File 2105, and we'll see if Mayor Jacob Fry will be able to make it up for you.
Welcome, Mayor Fry.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Thank you, Chair Murphy, for having us, members of the committee. If I make up all 3 minutes, if you can give us the money, we can just make that deal, and I'll be on my way.
And you want $25 million, right?
Well, right now we just want $2
million.
We got $15 million last year. We're asking for $2 million this year for pre-design and design funding for the outdoor community music performance venue at the Upper Harbor Terminal site. As you may know, the Upper Harbor Terminal site is a contiguous 48 acres along the Mississippi River. It's not often that you get an opportunity like this to totally revamp a really critical asset along a riverfront, especially in a major urban hub, and this is one. For generations, North Minneapolis has been disconnected from one of its most vital assets. Representative Lee and Representative Dean can tell you that, and it's been separated by a whole lot of heavy industrial, followed by a massive highway, and because of that, an entire community has not had access to the riverfront. So this is a full mile stretch along the Mississippi River. It's 48 contiguous acres, and we're planning on totally revamping it. And the reason we are able to revamp it is because there was a closure of the Upper St. Anthony Lock back in 2014 due to the spread of an invasive carp. As I mentioned, the state has already invested $15 million in public infrastructure improvements. That has been matched by another $15 million by our city, as well as the park board. And by the way, thank you very much. We're very grateful for the support that we received last year. You may be looking at an overhead shot of the venue in the river. The venue will be the centerpiece of the redevelopment, catalyzing both public and private investment in housing, commercial, as well as community space. The venue and the entire Upper Harbor Terminal development will be co-created by the community, the City of Minneapolis, the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board, and our development partners at United Properties and First Avenue Productions. First Avenue, as you may know, is a very well-known music venue, and they are going to be managing and running the Performing Arts Center, which is a really significant piece of this overall investment. So existing industrial structures will be integrated into the design of the venue and external public spaces. and there will be about 315 days each year to be reserved for community programming and publicly available green space. About 40% of the total project is devoted to green space and parkland. And so this commitment to public access is also reflected in the bill's language. So every aspect of this entire project is community-driven by a commitment to community investment. They've got subcontract hiring goals. We've got community entrepreneurs purchasing priority, hiring through the city's Step Up program, and a partnership with Minneapolis Public Schools. I'm gonna stop right there and answer any questions that you may have.
Madam Chair, just a quick question. It's a beautiful drawing. What are the chances of flooding? I mean, it's right along the river, so it's a beautiful area. Is that river... Is that part of the Mississippi, or what are we looking at?
Representative, thank you so much for the question. While I cannot say that I am an expert on flood and flood management, I am not aware of that area ever flooding before. It has been an Upper Harbor Terminal for a reason due to the surrounding land and infrastructure does not equate to a significant amount of flooding. Perhaps I can gear the question towards Representative Dean and Representative Lee if they've ever seen flooding in the area before.
I don't mean to drag this out.
No, it's a fair question.
Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair, Mayor, nice to see you. I just want to say it was nice you to cross the border yesterday, and I'm surprised you didn't sing this morning for the chair.
Well, if you want me to sing for Minnesota Boys in Black and Blue, Representative, I'd be honored to.
Let's slam this $2 million.
Madam Chair, to his point, in my whole life I've never seen that area of the river that floods. Generally what happens is more downstream, closer to Franklin Avenue, in that sort of area, there tends to be occasional flooding when it does flood.
Representative Lee, I had a previous meeting with Mayor in which we talked about this project, and he talked about all the things that he said today. And it sounds to me like an uplifting project for green space in that community. But I did see on television something that, and they said that there was going to be hotels in this area. Is this 1 acre stretch or 48 acre stretch and have a 1 mile of open space where people can come and have fun? Is there going to be hotels in that 48 acres?
Chair Murphy, there is the possibility of a hotel. That has not been determined yet. I do not believe there's any possibility of hotels, plural.
And Madam Chair, just to add on to that, too, this is a partnership between the City of Minneapolis and the Minneapolis Park Board, and so the Park Board will be more responsible for the green spaces and the community spaces that you are referring to, and at a later date, we can have the Park Board come and talk about that piece of it, too, if you wish.
And thank you.
Madam Chair, 40% is indeed reserved for green space regardless.
All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Don't run away yet. Mr. Mayor.
Oh, there you are.
Last year we did the $15 million. Now you want this too. Well, what did the $15 million get us?
Representative Erdahl, the $15 million went to preparation of the site. As you know, this has been a terminus of the significant ships that have been going upriver for quite some time. And just to prepare the baseline structure of the land for development at some point, whether that's cleanup or clearing away some of the garbage, or that's what it took to prepare the baseline of the site. This now is a combination of pre-design and design. And yes, we will be coming back for money as well in subsequent years.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Gunther. Oops, your time is up.
That broken ankle does that to me every time.
Martin County.
Yes.
Tell us, Chairman, about your Veterans Memorial.
This is about the Martin County Veterans Memorial, and I bought Mr. Fosnes so I don't have to introduce the bill completely. He will take over and tell you about all the wonderful work they've done and all the wonderful work with your help they will do.
In 2016, the committee was formed to commemorate, Steve Fosnes. I'm the treasurer for Martin County Veterans Memorial. In 2016, the committee was formed to commemorate the men and women of Martin County whose faithful loyalty and service in our armed forces during times of war and peace has helped preserve our nation's freedom. There was no memorials in Martin County when we started the committee, and so far the committee has raised just over $330,000 in 3 years. And the funding of the $400,000 grant that we're requesting, funds have slowed down a little bit, and this will help toward the just over $1 million project that we have planned.
$1 million, and you want $400,000?
Correct.
And what will that buy?
That'll further the construction. We have the wall paid for. The grounds have been donated, and that'll pay for the bronze memorials and the finishing of the project.
Thank you very much. Are there questions?
Everybody has this in the packet, so they want to know more about it if they can.
That's
Thank
very
you very much.
Good. And we can contact you if we Absolutely. Need further information, right?
Look
and Mr. Fosnes, we can contact you back.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much.
They did well.
They did excellent. At least $100,000, huh? Representative Haley, 2109. Have an amendment to talk about, too, just to inform us about.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the interest of time, I'll introduce Marshall Halleck from the City of Red Wing to give you the background on this request, and then I have a short letter from the Prairie Island Indian community in support of this bill that did not get here in time to make your packet, so I'd
yes.
like to read that when Marshall
here.
Is done. Oh, thank you
here.
So much.
My name is Marshall Halleck. I am the Administrative Business Director for the City of Red Wing. We want to thank the Chair and committee members for the opportunity to testify in support of the Rail Grade Separation Project at Sturgeon Lake Road. With me are Ron Rosenthal and Blake Johnson with the Prairie Island Indian Community. Sturgeon Lake Road is a busy four-lane roadway that serves as the only public access to tribal lands of the Prairie Island Indian Community. Its Treasure Island Resort Casino, Excel's Prairie Island Nuclear Generating Plant, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Lock and Dam Number 3. Excuse me.
That's all right. Just calm.
Right now, there's a mainline railroad crossing at street level on Sturgeon Lake Road that poses significant safety risks. In fact, several years ago, the specific rail crossing was rated as one of the three most dangerous in Minnesota. That was in 2017. And we were awarded $14.7 million for a rail grade separation project at this site. The project has been a top priority for MnDOT and also former Governor Dayton. We have been delayed in moving the project forward due to complexities associated with right-of-way acquisition, but we have now entered into a memorandum of agreement with the Prairie Island Indian community so that we can land the crossing on Bureau of Indian Affairs lands held in trust for the Prairie Island Indian community. The cost for the project has unfortunately increased due to inflation, right-of-way acquisition, and other factors. Therefore, we are requesting an additional $4.8 million to complete the project. This project is very urgent. The current rail crossing is traversed by 12,600 vehicles and 40 trains on an average day, including trains that carry crude oil, ethanol, and other hazardous substances. This is some of the Bakken crude oil that crosses this these tracks. Additionally, the presence of trains on Sturgeon Lake Road creates a barrier for our emergency responders. The proposed improvement would enhance public safety by ensuring that emergency responders can reach the Prairie Island Indian Community Resort and Casino, the nuclear or the Prairie Island Nuclear Generating Plant, Lock and Dam, and Lock and Dam Number 3. So you can see how urgent this is. We've got one access in and out to a nuclear plant, a Prairie Island community, and a lock and dam, with rail trains coming carrying crude oil in and out every single day, and it floods every year. Such unfettered access by emergency personnel is critical as we respond to approximately 130 emergency calls per year on Prairie Island. Of those calls, 90% are medical, and time is critical, as brain damage can occur within minutes, as you know, of a heart attack or a stroke. It's essential that we move forward with this critical rail safety project, and we ask for your support. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
And you said you, I just want to draw everybody's attention to the letter from the Prairie Island Indian community that obviously is in great support of this bill, and they give some additional details about their safety concerns with these oil trains crossing at this site.
Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Haley, for bringing this forward. I don't need to reiterate anything, just that I support this bill. It is a safety concern with the one road in, one road out, in time of a natural disaster or train derailment or anything like that.
And do I understand that this is going, the road is going to go above?
Yes.
That's so correct. That they won't be stopped by the...
Right, that's right.
Okay. So one of the bigger, another one of the big issues is when we send public safety vehicles down, they're often delayed because of the frequency of the rail being used, so they have to wait till the train passes in order to make access onto Prairie Island.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, do we need to move the A1 amendment at all? No? Okay.
Just for information, you have it.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, committee members and Madam Chair.
Representative Eklund, 1793. Mayor Anderson, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. House File 1793 requests $1 million as part of the money needed to rebuild the airport runway at International Falls Airport. International Falls Airport is one of four international airports in Minnesota. The runway is 40 years old and can no longer be patched. $1 million is leveraged for federal funds to complete the project. With me today to testify is Mayor Bob Anderson, from the City of International Falls, and he'll provide the details. Mayor Anderson.
Madam Chair and Representative Eklund and members of the committee, joining me this morning is our airport engineer, Mr. Sean McMahon. And Sean spent 8 years in Iraq and Afghanistan flying C-17s over there. He will be available to answer any technical questions that we have. Thank you. The Falls International Airport, as Representative Eklund pointed out, is in need of the main runway and taxiway being rebuilt. And the Federal Aviation Administration and the MnDOT Office of Aeronautics have approved the Phase 2, which will be the reconstruction of the taxiway to runway standards, so that we're able to keep the airport open during the summertime when we do the main runway. The project is estimated to cost $20 million. We have $19 million in federal and state funding, and are seeking $1 million for the local share of this crucial construction project. Thank you for your time this morning, and we're prepared to answer any questions.
There's no local match at all from the fee program?
Well, there's going to be four phases, and we will be, the city and county will be putting in local monies on those other phases.
So this $1 million is for the local match?
For the phase two of the...
Phase two.
Correct.
And it's four phases?
Yes.
So are you going to be coming back in phase three and four?
I can't promise that we won't, but I know that phase one, we've taken care of that with the city and county taxpayer money. And I believe that certainly in Phase 4, we will be taking care of that also. Don't know about Phase 3 yet. We haven't got the approval from the Federal Aviation Administration on Phase 3 and 4.
Ah, okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Representative Dean, you're going to give me a minute?
Madam Chair, we will try to be very, very brief. First of all, thank you for the hearing and the possibility of presenting the bill. Many folks know that occasionally we do stuff with funding that was allocated previously not used and extending that, and that's, in essence, is what we're doing here. We've been here a lot with the Hennepin Center and the Schubert Theater, but we're hopeful that this might be the last time you see us relative to the old Masonic Building and piece of that. I have with me today Mr. Stacy Mickelson from ArtSpace, and he'll talk very, very briefly, about the project.
All right. Thank you, Representative Dean, for the committee. My name is Stacy Mickelson with ArtSpace Projects based in Minneapolis. This is addressing language, a language change from a bill that was passed 3 or 4 years ago now that is about to time out, and so we're asking for a reauthorization. What happened is that the language put the fiscal agent incorrectly, and so this puts it back to the city of Minneapolis. If you look at the handout, I don't know if you have a handout for me or not. It's a color pictures on the top two pieces there. For the Cole Center with ArtSpace. If you look at the picture on the right-hand side, there's three buildings in that photograph. There, all three buildings are part of the Minnesota Schubert Theater or Cole Center complex. But the two buildings that are to the right, the wider ones, the not eight-story tall building, are part of a grant agreement that already exists for the city of Minneapolis and the state of Minnesota. This parks that money on that side of the equation so that we are able to access it and use it for improvements to the center. That's it?
Madam Chair, that's it. If there's no questions, I think we might have the shortest presentation.
Thank you.
Thanks, buddy. Thank you. Representative Eklund.
Seems like we're just here, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Madam Chair, members, House File 2176 is asking for $750,000 to further develop the recreation area at Birch Lake and Babbitt. The campground is situated in a spot that has access to snowmobile, hiking, and biking, as well as biking trails, as well as the Prospector ATV loop. It is also one of the gateways to the Boundary Waters Canoe Area. It is the Boundary Waters Canoe Area is two portages away from Birch Lake. With me to testify and to provide details is the mayor of Babbitt, Andrea Zafoncic.
Welcome to the committee, Mayor. Please continue.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. Birch Lake Recreation Area is located on the shores of Birch Lake. It's a 7,000-acre lake and is one of the most heavily fished lakes in the Tower Fisheries Management Area. The lake is 75% undeveloped and provides a BWCA experience. Vermilion Campground, now approximately about 30, 40 minutes from us, now has a year and a half wait. We are hoping to expand on our offerings of our town and encourage tourism in our area with this recreation park. We have all sorts of recreation from camping, fishing, canoeing, boating, hiking, biking, four-wheeling, connections to multiple trails, and our new boat landing was recently enhanced in 2016, as well as we're right off the Prospector Loop and in conjunction soon with the Mesabi Trail, so we've got all sorts of rounded recreational experiences for everyone. And as Representative Eklund mentioned, we're only two portages away from the BWCA, so if you're unable to get a overnight camping permit in the BW, you can still camp and have access to it via day permits from our area. We are asking for $750,000 to complete this project. We are putting the city sewer and water out into the campground to enable to not only protect our watershed more, but we are hoping that the adjoining RV park will be hooking onto it, as well as some local cabins and other resorts as well.
Mayor, is the $750,000 for the extension of the sewer and water?
It's for the completion of the project. When we initially started it, we were going to go with sewer and septic, but now we've added this on there, just seeing that this was more a feasible operation due to the protecting of the watersheds and the flow rate.
What's the total cost of the project?
$4.4 million.
And how much of the $4.4 million is completed?
We're getting closer to it, but the city has already committed to fulfilling everything. We are going ahead with this project. We're just trying to make it as easier on our town as possible, seeing that we are a limited population of about 1,500.
And how much is the city contributing for a match? Or the county or whoever it is?
It's the city. The city is undertaking this project. We haven't quite figured out those numbers. I'm estimating roughly about $250, but if we have to match up to $750, we will. We are hoping not to, just to make it easier for our taxpayers.
Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There was $1.3 million in the bonding bill last year for this.
Correct.
And this $750, is this needed then for the project to go forward, or why was there a gap there, I guess?
When we originally proposed, when we went for the bonding bill last year, we did not have the addition of the city sewer and water, and that's what bumped the project up to $4.4 million. We thought it was going to be added on, but we didn't want to change our proposal at the time because we weren't 100% sure. We have now decided that this is the best route to go for our campground, and this is why it's added on to it now. And it is needed to complete the project. Thank you.
Mayor, are you on the PFA list?
The PFA list.
Madam Chair, no, they are not at this time, but we can check with Mr. Freeman and see if we can get added to that.
But you haven't applied.
We haven't applied, no, Madam Chair.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you would indulge a little bit of an off-topic question related to the boat ramp. Looks to me like you have a washing station there on the boat
We do.
Ramp.
We have an aquatic invasive species area right
and
there.
How is that going?
Pardon?
How is that going?
It's going well. We were one of the first ones in the area to have it. So if you can consider a boat landing state-of-the-art for our area, it would be probably one of those. It was one of the newer boat landings, so it's very nice. People are taking advantage of it. We don't have anyone stationed down there, but there are some groups in the area that do on busier weekends and such help out down there.
And there's no zebra mussels?
Well, I guess I'm not a total expert on that. I think they're sort of everywhere, but I don't know of any that are there right now, but...
Not yet, Madam Chair.
I hope never.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Representative Eklund. Okay. 2140.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members again. House File 2140 requests $1.9 million for a new multimodal trailhead in the city of Silver Bay. Silver Bay is uniquely situated for this trailhead. We have several trails, many different kinds of trails that will be using this trailhead, from the Gitchigami Bike Trail to the Prospector Loop, ATV Trail to snowmobile trails, and the new mountain bike trail that the Lake County is building. With me to testify and provide details is Silver Bay City Administrator Lana Frelick.
Ms. Frelick, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For many of you that may not know where Silver Bay is, we are centrally located up on the
heart of the North Shore of Lake Superior. We're an hour north of Duluth, an hour east of the Range, and an hour south of Grand Marais. As we are located also on two scenic byways, we're the intersection point of the Superior National Forest Byway and the North Shore Scenic Byway. So one of the unique things is Silver Bay is also the center point for all the trail systems, as Representative Eklund mentioned. We have been working on, we're most known for our mining company in town, but what we've been working on is working towards diversifying our economy. We know that the lakes and the trail systems are always going to be there, so the trail systems actually come right into our downtown area and are connected. So not only is the Trailhead Center accessible right from the center of our town, but it would be located next to all of our businesses and amenities that are there for people to use. Our request is the total project is $3.8 million. It will be ample parking, you know, and lighted parking for cars, larger trailers, recreational vehicles. There will be a multifunctional facility built where Wayside West with lavatories and showers for 24-hour access. There'd be green space, primitive space for hikers and bikers. But the biggest part of this is the safety of the users of trails. Right now, the only area that really has access is a small hiker's trail, and it overflows onto the scenic byway and our county road. And so people are taking, you know, their ATVs, their snowmobiles off their trailers, getting out onto highways. They're also impeding on where the hikers are typically parking their cars to access the trail. So this would allow for a refreshing of an area that's in our town that's aged, and provide ample parking, safe, separate trail access for both motorized and non-motorized users, and provide for a wayside rest along those scenic byways. It's the only one that I am aware of that's like that on the North Shore, but it is something that will help diversify our economy, and we hope you will support that.
What kind of local match is there?
Well, the local match right now is that we plan for 50% of the project to be a local match. We will be looking at additional funding as we seek, such as transportation alternative dollars or other non-state funding. The other part of it is Silver Bay is committed to long-term facility maintenance and management of that entire project. It will fall. It's not a revenue-producing type facility, so it will be coming on our taxpayers for the future years for the maintenance and operations of that facility.
Okay, Representative Tarkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does the DNR have any involvement with this project?
Well, they do through the trail systems, not necessarily specifically at this time with the funding, but we do anticipate connecting with them.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Have you requested funding from DNR through their trail
no,
program?
No, this project has come about rather quickly. We have been working on the Black Beach Campground. This is something that's new. So we have submitted funding for transportation alternative dollars. We are waiting on, we anticipate IRRB and some other type of trail dollars, but we have not approached due to the funding timing and the cycles, to their cycles of funds.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Representative Cagle, 1697.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House File 1697 would appropriate bonds for preliminary engineering, environmental documentation, and final design of the interchange on 610 and East River Road. If any of you have ever driven that stretch of road, if you're going west, if you miss your exit, you cannot get off until the river. And this really would kind of just complete the corridor. North Metro Mayors Association is in support of this legislation as well. And with that, I will turn it over to Doug Fisher to inform you more about the project.
Mr. Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Doug Fisher. I'm the Transportation Division Manager and County Engineer for Anoka County. The completion of the Highway 610, US 10 across the North Metro area now extends from Interstate 35W in Moundsview and Ramsey County, goes through Anoka County through the cities of Blaine and Coon Rapids, crosses the Mississippi River into Hennepin County, and it ends at Interstate 94 in Maple Grove. Earlier today, you heard about the system gap that still remains on the 610 project in Maple Grove. I'm here today to tell you there still is a system gap on this route in Anoka County in the city of Coon Rapids. Representative Cagle mentioned, both East River Road and Coon Rapids Boulevard have interchanges with Trunk Highway 610, but both of these are just partial interchanges. Eastbound traffic can get off 610 and westbound traffic can get on 610, but the opposite movements do not exist. This lack of access forces many westbound trips to prematurely get off Trunk Highway 10 at University Avenue and or Foley Boulevard, both of which are a mile and a half away from the destination access near 610. Because of the heavy commercial uses in this area, many of these trips are heavy trucks, and these trucks are rumbling through local city and county roads and neighborhoods. This is not right. After studying several alternatives, we feel that providing a full access at East River Road is the solution. This solution was prohibited in the past, or very expensive in the past, because of the proximity of Foley Boulevard to Highway 610. But as you can see on the handout that you should have received, the county is doing a $25 million reconstruction project on Foley Boulevard. That's the project shown in yellow. That's not what we're asking for today. What's shown in yellow is a railroad grade separation with the Foley Boulevard park and ride lot with Metro Transit. We're realigning Foley Boulevard, reconstructing it, grade separating it over the railroad, and moving it away from Highway 610. By doing that, we can achieve what's shown in the project in green, and that's what we're here to talk about today, doing two folded loops to provide the full access at East River Road. And at this time, we are just asking for $1.5 million to proceed with the preliminary engineering, environmental documentation, file and design for this particular project. Even though Trunk Highway 610 is a trunk highway, we're not asking for trunk highway bonds. We're asking for general obligation bonds because East River Road is Anoka County State Aid Highway 1, so it is eligible for general obligation bonds, and that's what we'd be requesting to move this project forward so we can fulfill the need in this particular area. With that, I'd answer any questions you may have.
Fisher, how many phases do you think this is going to take for completion?
Well, once we have the final engineering done, environmental documentation, we'll understand what our right-of-way impacts are going to be and then what the final construction costs will be, and then we'll move forward with that. And as with all our projects that we do, we will go after an assortment of funding opportunities through regional solicitation, federal funds, state funds, local funds, and complete this project. But with this move, by moving it to this stage with the engineering and the environmental documentation, we'll be able to pinpoint those exact costs to finish the project.
And does DOT support your plan not to use to ask for GO bonds rather than trunk highway bonds?
Just from previous experience, I know they will not support a trunk highway bond request. They like to ask for a trunk highway bond, so that is particularly why we would go after general obligation bonds through a program like the Local Road Improvement Program funding to do this. That's been a good mechanism.
And Mr. Fisher, when that happens, then you jump over them and not wait and ask for general obligation bonds, then do you get a higher position with the DOT plan?
I think, anytime you can advance a project closer to, once you have final design, right-of-way impacts identified, the environmental document done, it just opens up the opportunities for funding through other mechanisms. And we will work absolutely hand-in-hand with DOT, our MnDOT colleagues, on establishing this project and bringing it to fruition.
Thank you. Representative Cagle, when you started, you said that the North Metro, other North Metro towns or cities support your project. What do you mean by support?
The North Metro Mayors Association has been working with us on this project.
And how do they give you support?
I can turn it over to Troy Olson, who's here from the North Metro Mayors Association.
Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. The North Metro Mayors Association is a coalition of 15 communities in the North Metro to act as a regional voice. And we believe that this project not just impacts Coon Rapids and Anoka County, but the entire Highway 10, 610 corridor. So when we talk about North Metro Mayors supporting this project, we're talking about Ramsey, from all the way to Ramsey to down to New Brighton, as supporting this as an economic benefit.
Please define support.
Support, as in we think this should happen.
And so it's your voice, but it's not
voice.
Financially.
No, and we couldn't do that, no, as an association.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Thank you, Representative Cagle. Mr. Fisher, thank you. Ms. Morrison, Representative Morrison, House File 1071. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, House File 1071 asks the state for help to replace a bridge in Deep Haven that is in dangerous disrepair. It's not safe for large trucks to travel on and limits access to two neighborhoods, both for emergency vehicles and trucks. I have Mayor Pro Tem Steve Erickson here with me to testify on behalf of House File 1071.
Mr. Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Council. On behalf of the City of Deep Haven, we thank you for this opportunity. With me is Dana Young, our City Administrator, and Jim Archer from the engineering firm of Bolton and Mink, who may chime in if you have specific questions on the bridge. Deep Haven is a small community in the West Metro of just over 1,400 homes and just over 4,000 residents. The North Home Bridge is known as Bridge L9265, was built in 1920. It is a steel-structured bridge and shows every bit of its 99 years of age. In September of 2018, safety inspection reports performed by Hennepin County showed the bridge had a specification rating of 21.4 and being structurally deficient with NBI conditions rating of 4. But the superstructure and deck of the bridge was load rated in 2013 and requires posting. There's only one other bridge in the Hennepin County that had a worse rating, and that was the Browns Bay Tanger Lake Bridge in Orno, which has since been funded. The North Home Bridge carries North Home Avenue over an old rail line, which now serves as a pedestrian bike trail. The bridge is also the southernmost entrance to the neighborhoods of North Home and Cedarhurst, which consist of about 72 single-family homes. However, the condition of the bridge and the load limits prevent emergency vehicles such as fire trucks from crossing this bridge. That forces them to go to the southernmost entrance, which is restricted by a historic arch over the road and requires emergency vehicles and delivery trucks to drive in the wrong lane to go around the arch. We are currently number 82 on the state bridge bond rating, an estimated 5 to 7 more years of waiting on a bridge that is 99 years old and can no longer support emergency vehicles. The North Home Bridge is the third and final bridge in the city of Deep Haven. We replaced The Carson Bay Bridge in 2002 with the help of the State Bridge Bond Fund, and we replaced the Vine Hill Bridge in 2014 also with help of the State Bridge Bond Fund. Our concern here and the reason we are here asking for $750,000, the estimated cost from our engineering firm to replace this bridge is because of the age of the bridge, the safety impact that it requires, and the length of estimated time that we'll have to wait for the bridge bond fund for our turn to come up. And also, one caveat, because we are a city under 5,000, we are sponsored by Hennepin County. So we also compete with other bridges in the county as the county brings the bridges to the state bond fund. We don't get to bring that directly. So with those caveats, we are concerned that we have 5 to 7 years, roughly, of additional waiting for this bridge, which is creating a safety issue for our community. Thank you.
And so what happens to your position in 5 to 7 years if we do this now?
Well, in essence, we wouldn't need it. So it is the third and final bridge in the city of Deep Haven. So we would have no need to be on the in spot 82 on the bridge bond fund if you were to fund this now.
And do you have the funds to match?
Yes.
For your local matches?
Yes. So anything that were to run over or match or however it was put together, the city of Deep Haven has put aside upwards of $500,000 in matching funds ready to build this project.
But you don't have an estimate of what the total amount of funding would be.
Madam Chair, at this time, we have an engineering estimate of $750,000. We have not done full engineering and design. This event today had 1 week pre-lead-up. And so although we have been working with Senator Osmick on the Senate for the last 3 to 4 years on the Senate side, we had not spent money as of yet doing initial design work. So what we have and what we are working on is an engineering estimate, and we are willing to live with that engineering estimate wherever the cost may land.
And then once you get if you get this $750,000, then the rest of the bridge you're paying for.
Correct. We are prepared to pay for whatever overruns over the 750 that bridge costs, correct. And just a sidebar, Madam Chair, that bridge is physically as long as the Vine Hill Bridge that we replaced. It won't be as wide or as big, but that bridge ran $1.4 million to replace. We don't anticipate that, but we would not be surprised by a bridge that runs $900,000 or $950,000 to replace.
Representative
Erdahl. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one quick question, and it's only about $20,000, but the bill is for $750,000, and the memorandum we have from Bolton and Mink says that the cost is $730,000.
Yeah. So again, we're working on an engineering estimate. The 750 is the number that Senator Osmick has in his bill. So we simply match the number of what is in the Senate bill.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Morrison.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Representative Lippert, 2295. We need a minute. At least.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Expanding access to transportation is a key equity concern for the Northfield community and for surrounding communities as well. This is a key concern for low-income members of our community region, as well as elders and new American communities, too. So before you is a $2.5 million bonding request for a regional transit hub. That will be in the city of Northfield. It will serve both a public transportation provider, Hiawatha Land, that provides public transportation within Northfield, also to the community of Lonsdale, and is currently exploring expanding access to other surrounding communities. It will also provide a site for Northfield Lines, which is a key commuter, provides a commuter service to Minneapolis-St. Paul as well. This is also will be placed in a region of Northfield that's seeing some redevelopment, and so there will be this will help spur some additional commercial redevelopment in this area as well. Transportation expanding access is a key priority of the Northfield City Council too. This time I'll turn it over to our city administrator in the city of Northfield, Ben Martig, to say more.
Mr. Martig.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ben Martig, City Administrator Northfield. I appreciate the opportunity. As Representative Lippert said, Northfield, most of Northfield is located outside of the seven-county metropolitan area, but we do have heavy transit needs without the access to the system that many of the metro benefits from. We have two major colleges in St. Olaf and Carleton that does create additional transit needs within our community. We have daily private service to the metro that's happening through Northfield Lines as well, and they would be utilizing this in addition to Hiawatha Land. The transit station would include basically bathrooms and waiting areas, an access road, and surrounding parking lots. It's also, as Mr. Lippert said, really part of a larger redevelopment project. Even though we have not specifically put a matching request within our funding, the city has invested substantially in infrastructure. We initiated safety improvements across Highway 3 at the local cost. We're investing in new road surfacing, quiet zone designation of a rail line that's next door. With the rail line long term, this could serve the Dan Patch rail line in the future should that project develop it over time. So it is looking at long term as well. We also have invested in plans and specifications on the transit hub building and access road and have done environmental work. So a significant portion of the project is shovel ready, and we believe we could accelerate this project quickly if we receive state funding. Our work with MnDOT and Hiawatha Land on this project dates back to the early 2000s, so we've been working on this for quite a bit of time, and this funding would help make it become a reality.
Have you asked for state money before?
Yes.
For capital investment money before?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do not believe that we have asked for capital investment funding. The city has pursued other funding opportunities in the past.
Have you received any federal funding or DOT funding?
Some time ago, there was some federal dollars with a related project. This project has a long history, and they were looking at a different location at one point in time. So specific to the site, we have not received any federal funding. We are looking at, we have applied for funding through some MnDOT funds through Hiawatha Land, and we've been unsuccessful. There have been limited dollars there, and it's a once-a-year funding, so we have been trying to receive other funding opportunities.
And how much is the City of Northfield planning to put in?
The request doesn't have a specific matching contribution. Again, we've made prior investments. I don't have the number with me as far as what the city has put into it to date, but I would estimate it'd be in the probably in the millions with the infrastructure investments.
Be interested that we can. In that figure.
Sure, I can provide that to you.
Thank you. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is just more of a comment, having spent 4 years down in Northfield at Carleton College and Ms. Dyson being an alum there too. I think that this is a critical need for the city and for the two schools down there, and you know, having students come back up to the Twin Cities for the you know, to our suburbs to use some of the amenities that we have, and also having students from the two colleges travel up to Minneapolis, St. Paul to do some community service event. I think that this is a needed project, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Representative Pearson.
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson and I were just talking about the definition of major college was what was referenced, and I'm not sure that those colleges qualify, but I appreciate the comments.
Oh, oh, oh.
Major college.
One step below the state.
Representative Lippert, that sounds to me like a challenge, but you can take care of that at a different time.
We can talk about that offline, Madam Chair.
Not part of Representative Hornstein's time.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Hornstein, I need 5 minutes. Time's up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very happy to present House File 1606, which requests $75 million in bonding for three different bus rapid transit lines.
Excuse me. Would you please start again?
Okay. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I am happy to present House File 1606. And this is a request of $75 million in bonding for three arterial bus rapid transit lines that would be operated by the Metropolitan Council. And arterial bus rapid transit is a different form of transit from a traditional city bus. They are characterized by making fewer stops on their urban routes. That significantly speeds up travel time. They have ticket machines at stations that allow customers to purchase tickets before boarding, similar to light rail. They have low floor buses and raised curbs at stations for easy and expedited boarding. And they have signal priority on the actual arterial streets that they run on. This is the future of efficient and effective transit, and we have a very successful line already in operation in St. Paul, the A line, which has high ridership. I have a quick testifier who will identify himself for the record and be very, very short in his testimony.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Sean Broom, and I'm the Director of Public Policy at the Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce, where we advocate on behalf of our over 1,500 members. I'm also here today speaking on behalf of Keep Minnesota Moving, an organization of chambers of commerce and transit advocates fighting for comprehensive transit and transportation solutions for the state of Minnesota. We're here today in support of House File 1606. We believe that this is a very important investment. It will fund the construction of three arterial bus rapid transit lines. And each of these lines is an investment in a stronger region. The B line will connect some of the densest parts of Minneapolis and St. Paul to jobs throughout the region. The D line, running from Brooklyn Center to Bloomington, will bring riders from some of the most diverse and economically disadvantaged communities in the state to some of the most job-dense areas in the Twin Cities. The E line upgrades one of the highest ridership lines that Metro Transit operates through some of the densest parts of Minneapolis. It'll move riders and provide more connections in our region. Bus Rapid Transit is one of the smartest investments we can make. It provides excellent customer experience in a cost-effective way. It's efficient transit and expands transit options throughout our region. This is the beginning of an investment in BRT. The governor proposed for 10 BRT lines in his budget, connecting every corner of the Twin Cities together. Keep Minnesota Moving supports the governor's request for those 10 BRT lines and that vision. We urge you to support House File 1606 and the development of a stronger, more robust transit network anchored by cost-effective and accessible bus rapid transit lines.
Thank you, Mr. Bloom. Representative Hornstein, you're asking for three lines. The governor recommended one for capital investment. He might have had a lot more for the general, but one for capital investment. Which one?
Well, the one that the governor is recommending is the D line, and that would connect Brooklyn Center and Bloomington.
And which one do you want?
Well, I want all three, Madam Chair.
Yes. And a line costs how much?
Well, you know, that
Brooklyn Center to Bloomington, how much does that cost?
I'll let Mr. Broom.
Mr. Broom, quickly.
Yes, ma'am. As I am not a member of staff for Metro Transit, I do know that Charles Carlson from Metro Transit is here and may be able to give you the exact number. As I understand it, the D line is required to do some engineering, and I believe it has about a $40 million.
Mr. Carlson, could you give me a, not now, and give it to the committee, pricing on all three of the proposals? And then give it to the committee for our consideration. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Real quickly, our Chair Hornstein, the bill requests money for the B line, Minneapolis to St. Paul. We already have the green line. How does this differ?
The route doesn't follow the Green Line route. It's a different route and doesn't connect the downtowns directly, my understanding.
The line it mentioned goes down Lake Street, connecting uptown in some of the densest parts of the city of Minneapolis and some of the most transit-oriented parts of the city of Minneapolis. It also connects, really importantly, to basically every other major transit investment that we've made. It's supposed to connect to the Southwest Light Rail, to the Green Line, and as well to the A-Line BRT in St. Paul.
So it would run on University Avenue. It might be parallel but miles apart.
Yes, sir. It's Lake Street and Marshall.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bierman.
That means you're done, Frank.
I thought Representative Bierman had a question. Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
House File 648. Representative Bierman.
Madam Chair, thank you, committee. I wish to present House File 648, which seeks to improve the Metro Red Line Bus Rapid Transitway with the addition of a sky bridge over Cedar Avenue at 147th in Apple Valley. Cedar Avenue, or Highway 77, is one of two crossings over the Minnesota River between Hennepin and Dakota counties. This corridor is expected to experience a 63% increase in traffic volume in the next decade, according to the Metropolitan Council. We need to promote safe crossings of this already very busy corridor. With me today, I am proud to have Apple Valley Mayor Mary Heyman Rowland, who will elaborate on this need and its importance to our community.
Thank you, Representative Bierman. Madam Chair, representatives, my name is Mary Heyman Rowland, and today I'm with our City Administrator Tom Lowell and our Public Works Director Matt Somm, and we stand in solidarity for this House File 648. I want to thank you for allowing us to have this time to illustrate the importance of what we are speaking about today. We're working together on the next building block for the completion of the original design of Minnesota's first bus rapid transit in the core of Apple Valley's vibrant downtown, an enclosed pedestrian and bicycle sky bridge to provide safe access across Cedar Avenue at 147th Street. Cedar Avenue is the primary north-south transit corridor in Dakota County today and is home to the Metro Red Line Bus Rapid Transitway. You may have already seen the sky bridge that exists just south at the Apple Valley Transit Station on Cedar Avenue at 155th Street as part of the original design of the Bus Rapid Transit Corridor. This connection has proven to be an important addition to the downtown by providing a safe and convenient way to cross busy Cedar Avenue south of County Road 42. And as traffic levels continue to grow, as Representative Bierman has illustrated, we need a similar connection north of County Road 42 at 147th Street. Currently, traffic volumes on Cedar Avenue are approximately 50,000 cars per day, and trying to cross the roadway at 147th Street requires you to cross 9 lanes of traffic. Imagine that as a pedestrian or a bicyclist. Downtown Apple Valley and its jobs corridor is a bustling employment and activity center. It is home to 9,800 jobs and more on the way. Since the opening of Cedar Avenue Transitway in 2013, we have seen more than $250,000 in private development in and around the corridor, and we need to ensure that Cedar Avenue does not become a barrier to our prosperity in our region. Thankfully, there's an easy fix to this problem. The 147th Street Station transit stop was originally designed and built to easily accommodate the installation of a sky bridge. The tall towers that you see along the roadway are custom made to allow for the installation of the sky bridge. Elevators and enclosed stairwells on both sides will connect the sky bridge to provide a safe crossing. Motorists will also benefit from the sky bridge. Cars, bus, truck traffic move more freely and safely, when there is less conflicting traffic from crossing pedestrian and bicyclists. In 2018, over 250,000 riders used the Metro Red Line, and this number is expected to grow. As Representative Bierman stated, the Metropolitan Council projects the traffic volumes along Cedar Avenue at the Minnesota River Bridge. They're forecasted for a 63% increase in the next decade, and our safety concerns are growing too. Our growing suburban community must find a way to blend multimodal transportation systems, cars, trucks, buses, bicycles, scooters, wheelchairs, pedestrians, and more. The target investment in a sky bridge at 147th Street Station is an important building block to keep this safe and a business corridor strong. I would be happy to stand for any questions, and I thank you so much for allowing us this time, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mayor. How do you have nine
turn lanes?
Nine lanes of traffic.
At the intersection, there are two turn lanes on either side. So if a pedestrian is to cross, they have to walk from the transit station to the corner. And the bonding committee came out and saw this. They were quite frightened as they were crossing Cedar Avenue, and at that intersection there are nine lanes.
Thank you. And what's the total cost of the project?
$3.96 million.
That's what you're requesting?
Yes, and that's the total
that's
cost.
That's the total cost,
yes,
of the project.
Yes, it is. The engineering, this project is, Madam Chair, this project is shovel ready. And in fact, we've actually went out for bid previously, so everything is ready to go.
And did you get previous money from the Capital Investments Committee?
We did not.
From the state of Minnesota?
The original bus rapid transit line was an urban partnership agreement, and money was received from the federal government to Minneapolis and Eagan, Apple Valley, Lakeville, this whole corridor.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Pearson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. So the existing structure is kind of depicted that it stays the same. What is the clearance then underneath the sky bridge for, and does that's been coordinated and meets MnDOT
yes.
standards? It's in the rendering, it looks a little low. So just
Representative, it is exactly as the one is to the south at our transit station, and it is to specifications for MnDOT.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Hausman. You're short a minute or so.
We'll make it up.
Maybe two.
We'll make fast. It up. Thank you, Madam Chair. Every year when the Arts Advocacy Day on the Hill is scheduled, my office fills with enthusiastic arts advocates, and they always come with an economic study. And this year, the economic study said arts and culture, the institutions and their customers contribute $1.8 billion to the economy of the state of Minnesota. I am joined this morning by Kimberly Motes, Managing Director of the Children's Theater Company, who will tell you about one of those exciting projects.
Ms. Motes. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to speak about the Children's Theater Company and our request to the state this session for $4 million in a much-needed infrastructure improvements to our 40-plus-year-old building. I want to first take the opportunity to thank members of this committee last year and especially acknowledge Representative Dean Erdahl and Representative Alice Hausman for their leadership and support in championing a $1 million investment last session to help us begin this work. Children's theater annually serves 275,000 children and families who come from 80 counties in the state of Minnesota. Over half of that audience are children. More than 88,000 students participate in a wide range of educational activities that include student matinees to early childhood education programs, to teaching artists in the schools and theater arts training and professional development for teachers. Nearly every day, CTC is engaging with a classroom in the state working on social emotional development, resiliency, critical literacy, cultural competency, increased vocabulary and writing skills, teamwork, and collaboration. We provide access programs that are focused on communities of color, the LGBTQ community, people with disabilities, and low-income families. In fact, last year we provided over 12,000 tickets to low-income family members through our ACPASS program, which provides important family experiences for this population. We create 7 professional productions on our stages each year that include world premiere productions, such as the brand new adaptation of The Hobbit, which opened last Friday, and new plays focused on issues in our community, as well as beloved classics such as Dr. Seuss's The Grinch Who Stole Christmas and Cinderella. Last season, we employed 440 people, including 133 full-time equivalent employees. Our request to the state for $4 million this session will provide much-needed renovation and modernization of our 40-plus-year-old facility. Because half of our audience is children, we have a substantial segment of our audience that from which we cannot fundraise, but I'm delighted to tell you that we have raised over $4.5 million on a total project of $10 million. The funds from the state will improve and modernize our main stage facility, bringing it up to today's production, technology, and energy efficiency standards, improve core building infrastructure, and provide improvements to the audience and children's experience in the lobby, rehearsal spaces, and classrooms with major improvements and upgrades that extend the engagement and educational opportunities and aspects of our space. We are grateful to the citizens of Minnesota who have made us the largest and most acclaimed theater in the nation and one of a handful in the world. We want to thank you for considering our request in helping us continue to serve the citizens of Minnesota through our facility. I'm happy to take any questions.
Ms. Motz, this $4 million that you're asking for, is this for the main infrastructure of your building that's over 40 years old? Is that heating and cooling and that kind of thing?
That's correct, as well as major stage improvements, technology improvements, and upgrades to the facility. We have not had a major renovation to our original 40-plus year facility.
And do you have a theater match for the overhaul?
It's a $10 million total project, and we're securing $5 million in private support, and we've secured over $4.5 million of that $5 million private match, and we have requests out for the remaining $500,000.
And is the $1 million from 2018 part of your...
That is not part of the $5 million private, so that's an addition. So our request last session was $5 million. We were very fortunate to receive $1 million, and so we're coming back to the state for the remaining $4 million of public support.
Thank you for that clarification. Thank you. Representative Mariani.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members.
Good morning. You're last up.
I guess I'm the last one up, so we'll make it very brief and get you out of here soon. This is in regards to our downtown St. Paul YMCA, an important facility in our city, particularly for our downtown community, and unfortunately an aging facility. So I have both the president of YMCA and Mr. Erickson who can explain this request. The good news, members, relative to your deliberations is that we're actually lowering the request here and really moving to a pre-design and design request. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll turn it over to Mr. Erickson and Mr. Gunderson.
Good Mr. Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Jim Erickson, representing the YMCA, or actually the YMCA of the Greater Twin Cities today. You run a very tight ship, Madam Chair. You're exactly on time, so we will be brief. In your packet are the materials that I think summarize what I would say. I'd point you to the statement that I have there, which describes the support that we have from the public officials. It points out that all eight St. Paul legislators are signed on this bill, including, of course, Representative Mariani and your own Representative Lilly as a neighbor. We started, I'm going to just highlight the bolded paragraph on the page, which points out that we're not going to, and we're going to defer our request for $10 million of GO bonds. We're going to put that off till the next cycle, and we're going to make a decision about two opportunities we have. We'll come back in the middle of April. The Y will make that decision, and then we'll come back to you and your staff and Representative Mariani and suggest the appropriate number of pre-design and design money that would tie in to the choice we'd make. When we first introduced the bill, we were asking for $10 million for this facility. It's the daylight view of a new construction on a pad behind what you know as the Ecolab building. It's now called Osborne 370. This was the proposal. It was a $25 to $30 million proposal, and we were fully prepared to more than match the $10 million that we would be asking the state for. We're not ready to do that yet because we have now been presented with an alternative opportunity, which is represented in two different iterations in the second picture. The YMCA is now diligently studying those two options and those two opportunities. One is a new build, as you indicated. The other one is within the existing St. Paul Athletic Club building. And the Y staff is looking very diligently at what the right choice will make. We'll decide that in April. We'll come back to you. And then rather than ask for bonding money this year, we want to come back and tell you what the right planning money piece is. I want to indicate that with me today is some of the Y staff that are involved in this. Ashley Philippic is the executive director of the Galtier Current Downtown Y. Ashley, Kerry Gibbons is the vice president of operations. David Dominick runs the Midway Y. Amanda Novak is involved in this decision at the real estate level, and Judy Blasek has raised the funds for this facility. So I want to tell you that when we come back for planning money only, we will have already far more than matched the money that we'll ask for, and we'll be specific about that. Madam Chair, I'd like to conclude by allowing CEO and President Glenn Gunderson with a final comment.
I'm sorry, we have three people that have questions.
Okay, I'll take the questions, then if we can close with Mr. Gunderson.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Mariani, I think you know the question I'm going to ask here. My constituents are contacting me, why on earth should I support this? And the YMCA is abandoning the city of West St. Paul and has been jerking the citizens around for the last 2 years as to whether or not our facility would even stay open.
Madam Chair, I can answer that question for Representative Mariani.
Mr. Erickson.
I have talked to Representative Hansen about it. He knows that we are in the process of selling the property, currently the YMCA in West St. Paul is. But we are very close, Representative Hansen, to announcing to you and the world that we have a elegant alternative that I think you will like. An improvement, and we're not prepared to say that yet, but I want to tell you that we will respond to your concern, and we're happy to talk to you about those details.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How is it that the YMCA is eligible for bonding money?
Mr. Anderson.
This would be a GO bonding facility that just as in many nonprofits, the city would own it, the Port Authority would own it, and lease it back to us. So there's a number of examples of nonprofits that come in, have the city own it, that they're eligible, cities and governments are eligible for bonding, and the nonprofit leases it, and I could give you dozens of examples where that is. So it's a GO bond owned to the city, leased back to the by the Port Authority, in this case probably to the YMCA.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Erickson. You referred to coming back the next cycle. What is the next cycle to you?
Representative Erdahl, what we intend to do is ask you this April in this bill for, as I indicated, for planning money only. Then we would be shovel ready when we came back to the 2020. We hope there's a bill this year and there'd be a 2020 large bill that we would be entirely eligible for. We've, as I indicated, we've already almost matched the money that we'll ask for then.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. And Mr. Erickson, if you were not funded this year, what would you be asking for next year?
This is a bit of a but-for test because we really need to get this funding to pursue, as the last statement in this statement from President Gunderson indicates, it's but-for this help. So I guess we hope you'll get, and I'm in terms of order of magnitude, I think we'll come back for something like $500,000 to $1 million of planning money. And then, depending on the cost of this structure, and we believe that one of the two is will maybe less and more efficient, if that's the case, I can't say what the number would be. That'll be depending on real engineering that we would do with the planning money that you give us. Madam Chair, if I could take my last minute to...
There is no last minute, right. Mr. Erickson. We're done. I'm sorry that we were so rushed today. The next meeting is tomorrow evening, and we won't be quite as rushed because we don't have... We have 5 minute limits tomorrow, and we have questions within that 5 minutes, so no one should plan on talking for more than 2.5 so that the committee members get a chance to talk more than they've talked today because they're very frustrated today. But we did get all the hearing requests in for today. We got 20 more yesterday, but they might not be heard. This meeting is adjourned.